It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Well, the Prince Harry divorce from the royal family seems to have taken another step. The Duke of Sussex filing papers yesterday listing the United States, not the UK, as his primary residence. Now, in reality, he and Meghan have lived in California since 2020. But a little piece here says that they live there with their two children, Prince Archie and Princess Lilibet. Do your kids still get to have those titles if you're living in America? I don't know. It's the deconstructing the rules of British royalty is just above my pay grade. This is an outrageous and sad story. In the NBA, Jontay Porter of the Toronto Raptors has been banned for life for gambling. And it's the details are horrifying. I mean, this is like the 1919 Black Sox scandal that ruined baseball's image for a long time. First active player or coach to be kicked out for gambling since 1954 in the National Basketball Association. So this idiot, Porter, gave a confidential tip. This is all according to the NBA commissioner who took this action. To a sports bettor before the game, one game, and somebody else was then able to place an $80,000 bet to win over $1 million. And to make sure that the bet was successful, Jontay Porter pulled himself out of that game against the Sacramento Kings. After just 3 minutes, and he said he was ill, he didn't feel well. So he bet on games, at least 13 bets on NBA games using someone else's account. They're not games that he played in, but he did even bet on the Raptors to lose. He bet on his own team to lose. These wagers as high as $22,000, totaling $54,000. And this guy blew up his career. I'm sure. Even, you know, he's not a frontline superstar, but I'm sure he was getting paid more by the NBA than he could make on these bets. Commissioner Adam Silver saying, raises important issues about the sufficiency of our regulatory framework. I mean, what a black eye for the NBA. Elon Musk, haven't heard much about him lately. Yeah, right. So with Tesla, the board, picked by Musk, of course, wants to give him back his compensation plan that had been kind of vetoed by a Delaware judge, a compensation plan worth $47 billion. Tesla has to provide more information to shareholders about how this was arrived at. I mean, look, you could argue that Tesla is Musk, just as X is Musk, just as SpaceX is Musk. But I don't know. The figures are so staggering, $47 million. Now, let's get right to story one. Because after I finished the podcast yesterday, we talked about the suspension of NPR senior business editor Uri Berliner. He resigned. Resigned under pressure. I would almost say forced out. And you could see this coming when I was on a special report with Brett Baer on Tuesday night. The last line that I said to Brett was, the question now is whether he'll be able to keep his job. And I guess it became untenable. And so after 25 years there, repeatedly complaining to management about how NPR had gone from sort of just like the normal left-leaning organization to what he called off the rails, left-wing activism. Lots of concrete examples in the piece that he wrote, in the interview, saying this really went into the stratosphere with the election of Donald Trump, and they did everything they could to damage Trump's presidency, talked about being anti-Israel, talked about identity politics, kind of ruling at NPR, talked about coverage of climate change, the Mueller investigation, and how they had Adam Schiff on 25 times and just kind of echoed his talking points. Talked about the Hunter Biden laptop story, which, as you'll recall, the then managing editor said, we don't want to waste our time on stories that are not really stories and just distraction, except the laptop was confirmed. Its authenticity was confirmed a year and a half later by the big outlets, New York Times, Washington Post, and others. So a lot of this had to do with the new CEO, whose name is Catherine Marr. And I've read you some of her old tweets, even ticked off at Hillary for insulting non-binary people by actually referring to boys and girls. Imagine a presidential candidate doing that. And if you're NPR and you at least have the reputation, the appearance of being too far to the left, even if it's not true, should you hire as your chief executive officer somebody who worked for the 2020 Biden campaign and posts a picture of herself wearing the Biden campaign cap? So the original reason for the suspension was that technically Uri Berliner did violate the rules about writing a piece for another media outlet without permission. But Jack Schaefer writes in Politico, let's not kid ourselves, he was docked a week's pay for his message, not his conduct. If he had written a poem for The New Yorker or reviewed a book for The Washington Post without getting a sign-off, he might have gotten congratulations from his bosses, maybe a polite scolding. His real crime, air quotes, is that he trashed his own institution in public, did it loudly, and when you do that in most places of employment, a sharp reprimand is sure to follow. And I have a column today just talking about the New York Times dealing with this, a woke newsroom that is pro-Gaza, under investigation now, according to some good digging by the Wall Street Journal, for leaking information about the internal complaints about the coverage of the Israel-Hamas war. And they claim they're being bullied because they're being called in for interviews. And the MSNBC liberal host getting Ronald McDaniel fired. And similar other incidents going back to the New York Times several years ago, when the editorial page editor, James Bennett, was fired because the woke newsroom was outraged that he would run an online-only opinion piece by Republican Senator Tom Cotton. So it just goes on and on and on. Schaefer writes in this piece that, look, newsrooms are filled with natural complainers. That's one of the reasons they get into the business. You can confidently predict an altercation unless you've got a lion tamer. So when you have an internal Slack account or other internal channels where people can bitch and moan, it also benefits a protester to bring the revolt to complaints that include race, sexual orientation, religion, gender. But Berliner is a white guy, so he couldn't play that card, though he talked about it and wrote about it. Schaefer cites a couple other examples that I covered but have forgotten about. One was Politico gave conservative author and podcaster and editor of the Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro, an assignment to be like the editor for a day on the Playbook column. The staff freaked out and they yanked it. Never mind. You just go about your business. We forget we ever said anything. Washington Post suspended reporter Felicia Samnez for tweeting about Kobe Bryant right after his death. I thought it was a little insensitive, but suspension. If Berliner had dropped his bomb after organizing like-minded colleagues in NPR to support him, he would have remained untouchable. But maybe the reason he didn't get his own posse together is because the problems he had with NPR being way, way too liberal and biased didn't have a lot of support within NPR, where they're happy to keep doing what they're doing. So this is progressive groupthink, according to this political column. He says that the audience has changed as NPR's got more liberal. So now it doesn't resemble America at large. Schaefer says that's been true for about 40 years. Here's Charles Cook in National Review reading through Catherine Maher's tweets. What jumped out at me is that she seems completely and utterly unself-aware. That's why her affect is so creepy. She believes it. And worse yet, she's never considered the alternative. Almost everyone I've ever met in this world has at least some ability to look at themselves from the outside and see how they come across. I'm not convinced Maher can. A lack of self-awareness typically indicates a lack of empathy. Does Catherine Maher come across to you as the sort of person who understands other people's experiences? I don't think she does. Some believe this makes her ill-suited to head up NPR. Personally, I think her only option is to get married to it. Now, a week later, I've written about this, talked about it on the air. Others, mostly on the right, have done that as well. But there have been nothing in Politico, nothing on MSNBC, nothing on air at CNN, and nothing at the Washington Post. Finally, today, the Washington Post decides to take note of the NPR controversy. And it's a catch-up piece. Berliner's comments have angered many of his now former colleagues. On its face, this is an interesting phrase, it seemed to confirm the worst suspicions held by NPR's critics on the right. Everybody wants to reduce this to right-left. Berliner is not a conservative. He doesn't like Donald Trump. He didn't vote for Trump twice. He just thinks this should be a thing such as fairness. And it's not a coincidence that he talked to Barry Weiss at Free Press, because she was an opinion editor at the New York Times who left after the whole James Bennett uproar, because she felt, even though she considers herself liberal, that she was denigrated by her colleagues for not being liberal enough. Berliner's future at NPR became an open question. NPR leaders were pressed by staff in meetings this week as to why he was still employed there. They now question his journalistic judgment, according to one journalist who spoke on condition of anonymity. Well, Berliner didn't do that. He used his name, which took some cojones. But the problem with ignoring these stories, and I've seen this happen again and again and again, and as the media person, I've often tried to, you know, sometimes something starts on the right and is dismissed as just conservative claptrap, and then it gets so big that everybody can't ignore it. I remember comments about Strom Thurmond and, oh, you know, it's just the conservatives are upset about this. Trent Lott was the guy who had praised Strom Thurmond. That's what it was. And it ultimately cost him his job, but the mainstream media was way late on it. So the Washington Post should have covered this. At least the New York Times had an NPR in turmoil story 2 days after it broke. To wait a week just doesn't cut it. And by the way, National Review editorial says, my computer is acting up. I just tamed it, at least for 8 hours. National Review editorial says, National Public Radio has every right to operate as a left-wing propaganda outlet masquerading as a legitimate news organization, but it is not entitled to pursue this goal with taxpayer money. The latest revelations about the ideological rot in NPR only made this case stronger.
Hey, let's pause right there. The Buzz Meter continues right after this. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
And the magazine goes on to say that NPR likes to argue that only 1% of its funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And I've always felt if it's just 1%, then give it up and take this issue away from NPR critics. But it also gets a lot of money from local public radio stations, which have these fundraisers. In 2021, according to AEI, NPR reported $90 million in revenue from contracts from customers, significant portion of its total $279 million. Fair point. Oh, and this is kind of related, not a media company, although it is sort of kind of a media company, Google. Google fired 28 employees yesterday who were involved in a protest against a contract with the Israeli government that's also shared with Amazon. So, look, don't they have free speech? Well, here's what happened. 9 of these employees were arrested doing sit-ins at Google offices in Sunnyvale, California and New York. They were held for a few hours before being released. Look, if you work for Google and you don't like Israel or you love Gaza or you defend Hamas, fine. And you can peacefully protest too, but you can't go and have a sit-in at your own company because you don't like it. I have no problem with that. Number two, if you blinked, you missed it. Alejandro Mayorkas, acquitted of impeachment charges by the Senate in about 2 hours. Total party line votes, as you might imagine. Now, Chuck Schumer stood up and he wanted to not just say we're tabling this, because obviously this could come back to bite the Democrats when they have somebody that they want to impeach. Although I think even Mayorkas' worst critics, and the border is a horrible mess, and he certainly bears some responsibility, would say going after the cabinet member as opposed to the person who sets the policy, which is the president, was symbolic in an attempt to draw attention to the border fiasco. But Schumer, under what he thought was an agreement that had been worked out, said, well, we'll give you, you can issue so many amendments, we'll vote on them, you can issue so many points of order, and then we're going to vote. And everybody knew, of course, it's going to get dismissed. Lisa Murkowski, independent of Alaska, but who caucuses with the Republicans, voted present. And when the first article of impeachment was challenged, the Democrats voted it down by saying it was unconstitutional. On the second article of impeachment, also unconstitutional, that was charging him with breach of public trust. And so there was no trial. The trial came to a conclusion before the House managers could even present their argument. Now, there was legislative sparring. Ted Cruz wanted a closed session. Louisiana Senator John Kennedy motion to adjourn the Senate until April 30th. Well, that would have been helpful to doing the nation's business. Mitch McConnell called a point of order. He tried to table a point of order made by Schumer. Those all failed. Pure partisan politics on both sides. And thus ends the Mayorkas impeachment. Story three. Mike Johnson, I got to say, I know his job is in jeopardy, maybe even hanging by a thread. But he is trying right now to do the right thing. Now, look, when he was just a congressman from a district in Louisiana, he seemed opposed to aiding Ukraine. But now that he's the Speaker of the House, an unlikely Speaker of the House at that, he is looking for a final vote by Saturday night on a foreign aid package for Israel after the 300 plus drones and missiles launched at Israel. 99% of them stopped, blown up, ineffective with U.S. help. Separate one on Ukraine. Separate one on aid to Taiwan. and then a national security package. So Republicans are not liking this very much. They have been venting. They wanted to see the text of these bills. I think it was finally released late yesterday. There's a 72-hour rule, which probably explains why he doesn't expect the final vote until Saturday night. And this would provide $95 billion that the Senate passed 2 months ago, aid to Ukraine, aid to Israel, Taiwan, but broken into three pieces, which of course makes the Ukraine package the most vulnerable. And then the fourth package being molded by Mike Johnson and with President Biden's support is, among other things, instituting a nationwide TikTok ban. We've taken the Senate supplemental bill, Johnson said on Fox News. We've improved the process and the policy. We're not the world's policemen. We're going to do the right thing. Here's Biden. I strongly support this package to get critical support to Israel and Ukraine and provide desperately needed humanitarian aid to Palestinians in Gaza. So the only way this passes is if the Democrats bail out Mike Johnson, because there's already two Republicans, the most famous one being Marjorie Taylor Greene, who are backing this motion to vacate, which means he would lose his job, as Kevin McCarthy did almost 7 months ago. Republicans might block this from coming to the floor. Every true conservative America First patriot in the House, says Virginia Congressman Bob Good, who's the chairman of the Freedom Caucus, should vote against this rule for this barn forward aid bill with no border security. All right, I'll come back to Ukraine at the end, but let me go to number four and President Biden. He did an interview with Nexstar, and he was asked about Donald Trump's trial in New York, which, by the way, resumes today with jury selection. Yesterday was an off day. So basically, the cable networks didn't know what to do with themselves. So they rehashed everything that had happened the previous 2 days or had, you know, tomorrow, jury selection resumes. Biden's answer, his lack of ethics has nothing to do with me. That is really the first comment he's made about the Trump trial. He doesn't want to talk about it. It just makes it appear more partisan. But Trump repeatedly and without evidence, and I actually said this to the former president in our interview, the notion that Joe Biden is behind all this, that he has engineered this, particularly a state case, Alvin Bragg, Manhattan DA. Yes, I know somebody went from Justice Department to the Manhattan DA's office. And believe me, I don't like this case. I think it's highly partisan. I think it probably shouldn't have been brought. I think it's the weakest of the cases. It's the least important of the cases. Hush money, Stormy Daniels, stretch to a felony. But it is going on. He's also asked about inflation. Well, we're working to get those prices down, says the president, by making sure corporate profits are brought under control. And asked about the pro-Palestinian protesters when he was in Scranton. Biden says, I've been meeting with them, and I've made it clear we have to vastly increase the amount of food, water, and health care going into Gaza. Meanwhile, today, at a campaign rally in Philly, this is more of a visual demonstration. There's not much news here, but many members of the Kennedy family will make a show of endorsing Joe Biden and rejecting RFK Jr., the independent candidate, who could well be a significant spoiler in this race and hand the race to Trump. So we have RFK Jr.'s siblings, Joseph, Kerry, Rory, Kathleen, Maxwell, and Christopher. They have big families. 15 Kennedys will appear at the rally. Other family members may endorse as well. Kerry Kennedy will introduce Biden. And Joe Kennedy, former Democratic congressman, will introduce him at a second event. The show of force will send the clearest signal yet that America's most storied Democratic family is deeply fearful, says the New York Times, that one of its own could tip the 2024 election to former President Donald Trump. Many family members have previously expressed strong disapproval of Kennedy's candidacy and confusion about why he's challenging a Democratic president they admire. And look, whatever you think of RFK and his stance on vaccines and some of the conspiracy theories he's embraced, he's got the Kennedy name, and a lot of people don't pay attention to this. But there'll be pictures on the news and video and stirring speeches to say Joe Biden is the choice of the Kennedy family. That is everybody except one Kennedy.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Number five, you remember when, of course you do because it was only a few days ago, but just to refresh the recollection, Arizona Supreme Court reviving this 1864 abortion ban. No exception for incest, no exception for rape. Passed by this white guy who was married five times and had marriages or relationships with girls as young as 12. Carrie Lake has changed her position on it. She used to think it was great. Now she wants it blocked. Donald Trump said, you know, just in a couple of weeks, it'll all be straightened out. Well, it hasn't been again, because yesterday, Republicans in the Arizona legislature again voted to block a vote to repeal this 1864 ban. Not paying attention to Donald Trump on this. That could leave it unresolved. And even with Trump's prodding, this is now the sort of second round, or third, depending on how you count it, of State House Republicans in Arizona just not even allowing a vote on this. Now, here's the Republican House Speaker, Ben Thoma. Abortion's a very complicated topic. It is ethically and morally complex. We have to respect the fact that some of us believe abortion is, in fact, the murder of children. Well, but some people in Arizona, including in the legislature, also agree on a different proposition. I mean, this has been the argument for half a century, and certainly since Roe was overturned, that a woman should have a right to choose what to do with her own body. That's the argument. And abortion rights groups are trying to get a ballot measure passed that would put the right to abortion in the state constitution. So, you know, who knows? The politics are very scrambled here, but the pressure is going to continue to build. Are these Republicans going to be able to hold out? I think they need two Republicans in each of the state House and state Senate to join with all the Democrats in order to force a vote. I don't know whether this will happen. And I just want to throw in this extra item. I said I was going to come back to Ukraine. So the chief foreign affairs correspondent of the Wall Street Journal, whose name is Yaroslav Trofimov, shared a video yesterday of Ukrainians ducking for cover as Russian airstrikes pummeled a city not that far from Kyiv. And he captioned the clip with a comment, ripping House Republicans for holding up additional military aid to Ukraine, which, of course, has been going on for months. Here's what it said. Massive Russian missile attack on the Ukrainian city of Chernihiv. At least 9 civilians declared dead. More under the rubble of buildings. Ukraine has essentially run out of air defenses because of the cutoff in American aid. And Russia is taking advantage of this strategic gift to level the country. AP says that firefighters were working on a building that was partially destroyed after this Russian bombardment yesterday. Hit an 8-floor apartment building, killing at least 17 people, according to authorities. Vladimir Zelensky responding to this latest Russian attack by saying, "This wouldn't have happened if Ukraine had enough air defenses and if the world were more decisive in opposing Russian terror. And the reporter, Trofimov, goes on to say, Ukrainians watch as the U.S. and allies scrambled to protect Israeli skies, but shrug off daily murder by Russian missiles. Now, is that way too opinionated for a guy who's the chief correspondent? I don't think he should necessarily be blasting the House Republicans, but, you know, war correspondents who risk their own lives are sent to these war zones to witness what's going on and speak the truth. So if he wants to say that Ukrainians are dying because of a cutoff or the inability to pass U.S. aid, and this is in stark contrast to what's happened in Israel, and people are shrugging off the daily murder by Russian missiles, I don't have a problem with that. Yes, it's opinionated. But look what side he's on. The side of that the U.S. is on. The side that NATO is on. Protecting the murderer, mass murderer, and war crime executioner, Vladimir Putin, from taking over the sovereign nation of Ukraine. And the only way that's going to happen is if Ukraine gets ammunition and air defense systems that it desperately needs. And everybody knows that if Ukraine loses this war, Putin's not going to stop there. I just wanted to get that in because I think it's so important, particularly against the context of Mike Johnson now trying to get at least some of his fellow Republicans to go along and get this desperately needed aid to Ukraine, as well as to Israel, which if a few more missiles had gotten through, there could have been a lot of dead Israelis. But thanks to Iron Dome and the other missile defense systems, and thanks to the U.S. and the British and the French, Israel was spared. Thank you for your time, as always. And with that, we'll see you tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts, and Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.